Welcome to the Keep Running podcast with me, Rachel Stringer.
And me, Amana Rai.
If you're listening to us now, then you're probably a runner, thinking about becoming a runner, or you just want to hear some inspiring stories.
Each week on our podcast, we will be sharing our own running experiences and chatting to some amazing and inspiring running people. And hopefully this all gives you an extra little bounce in your step for your next run.
Today on the Keep Running podcast, we have our first former elite female athlete joining us.
Our guest is the second fastest female marathon runner in the UK with a PB of 2:23 to her name.
She has competed in not one, but two Olympic Games, where in Beijing in 2008, she finished sixth, the joint best position of a British female in history, and has a 10,000 metre Commonwealth Games medal to her name.
Combining studies at Oxford University and the London School of Economics, followed by a job as a diplomat in the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, with her athletics career, saw her finally reach her dream of becoming an Olympian at the age of 35.
This woman is a tale of determination and of never giving up on her dreams. I am so pleased to say that today's guest is Mara Yamauchi. Mara, how are you?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you. And thank you for having me on your podcast.
Oh no, thank you so much for joining us. And it's been a few months now since I saw you when we were working over in Doha for the World Championships. I mean, that seems like a million years ago, I guess, all things considering the current situation with the lack of sport, hey?
Yeah, it feels like a previous universe, doesn't it? Pre-coronavirus and lockdowns and all the rest of it. And of course, yeah, it was a full, you know, world level sports event, which we haven't had now for a long time, sadly. But let's hope that sport returns reasonably soon.
Yeah, let's hope so. Did you watch the Impossible Games, Mara? The athletics on last week, was it?
I caught up online afterwards, and yeah, it was different. It's completely different to what we're used to, of course. You know, Vahan doing the 300 meter hurdles best on his own. we rarely see that sort of thing, but it's just great that sport has returned, and I've been enjoying the Ultimate Garden Clash events.
Me too. That's been fun.
Yeah, pole vault in your back garden. That's brilliant. I love it.
We're all managing, aren't we? Which is great.
Yeah.
So Mara, we like to ask all of our guests five questions to start with. So our first question for you is, why do you run?
So the main reason why I run is because I enjoy it. I just love it. I love being outside in nature. I like being physically active. It clears my mind. So the main reason is enjoyment. And then there are other reasons like to get away from work, to lose weight, to see my friends, to try and stay healthy. Now I'm retired from elite competition. It's no longer earning a living, which is another of the reasons I used to run. But I coach now, so I do have to stay reasonably fit. So a myriad of reasons, really. But the main thing is that I just really love running.
I think all those things probably resonate with a lot of our listeners for sure. And our second question, your greatest running achievement, I guess, in your career, and you have a lot. I just listed a few of them in the introduction.
Yeah, so I think the race that I'm most proud of is the one and only marathon win that I achieved in my career, which was the Osaka Ladies Marathon in Japan in 2008 in January. And the reason I was so proud of that day was 6 months earlier, the World Championships were held in the same city, Osaka. And I finished ninth in that marathon, and I misjudged my tactics, and it was a disappointing result. I basically went too hard too soon and paid for it in the closing stages, and I was really cross with myself. So when I returned to Osaka in January 2008, I really held back and kept something in the tank for the final few kilometers. And that's really how I won that race. So it was a bit of redemption from a disappointing race the previous year. And I learned from my mistakes and I ran a tactically much better race, which meant that I could win. Of course, finishing sixth in the Olympics also, I'm really proud of. But a win is a win. And I only won one marathon in my whole career. So, yeah, that's I think, the race that I'm most proud of.
Sounds amazing, and sounds like tactics really play a part in that win. And it must have been amazing to go back to Japan, because we'll come on to it, but I know that you did live there for 4 years as well, which is amazing. So our next question is, what is the best piece of running advice you have been given during your career?
So one of my coaches, the late Bob Parker, who used to run a women's group at Parkside AC back in the 90s, that was the first sort of really serious training group that I trained with. And everything was quite just cut and dried with him. There was nothing scientific, nothing fancy. It was just sheer hard work. And I was mainly running cross country with him. And he used to stand on the sidelines. And if you weren't at the front, he'd go, "What are you doing? Get up at the front." Of course, you think, what on earth do you think I'm trying to do? You know, you can easily think, well, that's a silly piece of advice. But actually, I think it was a really good piece of advice, because so many of us make excuses in our own heads for not producing better performances. You know, as I feel tired, I'm not up to it, those people are better than me. And actually, at the end of the day, you've just got to just do your absolute best and try and get up there. So, and I think later in my career, I did do that. I did things which I previously believed I was unable to do, like go to the Olympics. So I think just boiling it down to very simple things, and, you know, just get up there at the front. That's very simple. It's very clear. It's hard. you can come up with all sorts of excuses not to do it. So I'm grateful to him for making me realize that.
I love that. Simple is usually the best piece of advice anyone can give you. Next, Mara, who inspires you or used to inspire you or still does to this day?
So when I was a child, Daley Thompson was my hero, because he epitomised athleticism for me. He was good at all the different events that you have to do in decathlon. And that really appealed to me more than the athletes who were brilliant at one event. I was very active when I was a child and loved doing lots of different sports. So I think that's why he inspired me. But more recently, the Japanese female marathon runners really inspire me. There are a lot of them. So, for example, the 2004 Athens Olympic champion Mizuki Noguchi, the 2000 Sydney Olympic champion Takahashi Naoko. And the reason they inspire me is they work so unbelievably hard, that the mileage they run, the dedication, everything on sort of nutrition, mental preparation, the level of commitment and hard work is across the board just outstanding. And there's so much depth as well. So in terms of work ethic and just taking your sport seriously and doing your absolute best, I've never really seen athletes who work harder than those athletes.
I should have known Daley Thompson, Mara, because I remember in the airport when leaving Doha, he was there as well, and you were up picking his brains on all sorts of different things from Doha. I can remember now. I was like, of course you were. Yeah. That was you.
Well, when after the 1984 LA Olympics, when I was completely in love with him, he came to my hometown to the Adidas store and signed autographs. And I went by myself. I was 11 and I had really short hair. And I got to the front of the queue and gave him my piece of paper. And he said, "How are you, young man?"
And I was
so mortified and speechless. And I haven't met him since that moment. And then I was waiting. I knew he was in Doha and I thought, oh, how can I meet him? But he was busy doing his commentating for the BBC and it didn't transpire. And then just by chance, I bumped into him in the lounge at Doha Airport. So I thought, right, this is my moment. I have to say hello.
Oh, I love that all those years later you got to meet him. That's amazing. So what about a quote that never fails to brighten your day?
So when I was living in Japan, I met a Yakult delivery lady. So Yakult, the sort of yogurt drink, in Japan, they deliver it to your home like a milkman does. And I got chatting to an elderly lady who was doing this job. And she said to me, every day, you're the youngest that you're ever going to be. So I'm younger today than I will be tomorrow. And tomorrow I'll be younger than I will be the next day. So, of course, we're older than we have been. But on any given day that you're alive, you're the youngest you're ever going to be into the future. So, and I thought, and she said, you know, so make the most of it. So I thought that was a really good piece of advice, because, you know, when I'm feeling low or down about something, I can think, actually, I'm always just getting older. So make the best of today.
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of like the time is precious, isn't it? That it just goes so fast. I think no more than in lockdown, it's kind of racing away from us. And, you know, you need to make the most of every opportunity and moment that you get, for sure. So Mara, let's get into the main questions. You mentioned there, you know, your greatest achievement was the Osaka Marathon and then coming sixth at the Olympics. But you are still the second fastest ever British female marathon runner from 2009 with a PB of 2:23:12. When you still hear that to this day, what kind of emotions does that make you feel?
Sometimes I think, gosh, did I really do that? How did I do that? Because, I mean, I'm 46 now. I'm 7 years retired. So I'm much, much slower than I used to be. And, you know, I struggle to break 18, 19 minutes for 5K these days. And 2:23:12 calls for 8 lots of 5K under 17 minutes back to back. So it feels like a different person, but I am really proud of it. And no other Brit really has got close, although there are a few snapping at my heels now. And had the lockdown not happened, I think at the London Marathon in April, possibly my time could have been beaten. Yes, I'm really proud. I ran 2:25 four times before 2:23, and so I'd hit a bit of a wall at 2:25, but I really felt that I could go quicker than that. So to finally do it was fantastic. But then after that, I had a succession of injuries, and that 2:23 really was the start of the end of my career, because I was just getting a lot of injuries, and I was already 35. So it was wonderful while it lasted, although it was that sort of best time of my career was short-lived.
It's an absolute amazing achievement. And just to give our listeners some context around that is a per K you were running at 3:23 and per mile it was 5:27. So to our listeners, go and try that next time you are out, because that is fast for 1K or 1 mile.
I mean, if I ran 1K at 100% effort now, I probably couldn't break 3:40, and I did 42 of them back to back. So it's just, I mean, of course, I was 10 years younger. You know, I was running 100 odd miles a week. I was devoting my life to it. So it's kind of incomprehensible to me now. But at the time, if I look at my training diaries, I think, oh, okay, yeah, that's how I ran 2:23. I was training really, really hard.
And how did that race feel at the time when you did run 2:23? Did you go into it knowing that you were capable of such a time, or was it a bit of a surprise?
So before the London Marathon, I ran the London Marathon 6 times in the end. And before most of them, I did a VO2 max test about a week before. And the test I did in 2009 indicated that I was in about 2:21 shape. And that was the fittest that I'd ever been. So I went into the race really confident and aiming for around 2:21, 2:22. But whether you actually deliver your goal on the day depends on so many things in the marathon. Of course, it depends on the weather. It depends on the pace making, you know, what pace is agreed amongst all the athletes. And we set off, I can't remember the split at halfway, but it was in that ballpark, and I felt fine. I felt fairly comfortable. I was well down the start list in terms of who else was on the list, but I just focused on trying to do my absolute best. And I just hung on to the lead group, and gradually the others dropped off. And then there were two of us left. me and the eventual winner, Mikitenko. And in the last few miles, she was just surging repeatedly, and I tried to hang on. And eventually, I hung on for several of her surges, and then eventually she dropped me. And from that point on, it was difficult to close the gap. But still, I was really pleased to make the podium and to improve my best time a little bit more.
But Mara, I guess you don't just become a 2:23 marathoner overnight. So where did your running journey start, and were you always such a talented athlete?
So my running career has been very on-off all my life. So when I was a child, I didn't really do any organized running. I ran sports day, but that was about it. But I did a lot of other sports. I did a lot of swimming, hockey, tennis, rounders. So I was physically really active as a small child. And then when I was a teenager, I did swimming seriously with a club. So I think that built up my endurance base. And I also played a lot of hockey. I did a bit of road running, but nothing too serious. Then when I was at university, I joined the running team and did serious, organized, hard training every day. Then I went and joined Bob Parker's group at Parkside AC. And again, that was organized, hard, proper training. And then I joined the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, and I wasn't able to train at such a high level because my work was too demanding. And then at age 29, I switched to part-time work. So I was, again, training hard. And so I had spells of doing really tough, organized, proper training, and then spells of less training. And I think it's just gradual improvement over time. So, I mean, when I did cross-country training with Bob Parker's group, I won the English National Cross-Country. So I had some talent, and if I worked hard, I could get some good results. But then I switched to the marathon, and I was started off as a sort of novice in the marathon. So the answer to your question is years of consistent hard work. You don't run 2:23 just like that. You know, I was running on and off, well, from when I was 18, seriously, and I was 35 years old when I ran 2:23. So many years, decades even, had passed in the meantime.
What do you think about the age-old debate then, Mara, of talent versus hard work? Do you think one kind of ever supersedes the other, or do you think you have to have a bit of both?
I think you have to have a bit of both. I mean, it varies. So you see some athletes who aren't that talented but work exceptionally hard and have good coaches and good training setups and so on. And then you have other athletes who are exceptionally talented but a bit lazy, and they both reach world-class level. It depends a bit on the event. So in the marathon, to be honest, I think there's no substitute for years of hard work. You know, it takes a long time because you can only really race two or three times a year. It takes a long time to make substantial improvements. But having said that, if you, for example, are a very slight build, which is what you really want for the marathon, then you're automatically at an advantage. I'm quite a big build for the marathon, so that meant I had to really keep my weight down all the time. Whereas compared to some of the Japanese or African athletes who are naturally very slight, they have a natural advantage. So, and then in some events, in some events where the depth is not so great, I think you can really excel at world level, perhaps with fewer years of hard work. But you know, becoming a world class athlete isn't easy by any route, and world hard work is required at some level.
So I guess the thing that really stands out for me, Mara, is that you were a world-class athlete and a very, very talented and high-performing athlete, but a lot of athletes don't also have a career. And you had an amazing career as an athlete or not an athlete. To become a diplomat is a great achievement. So can you tell us a little bit about your career on the side of running?
Yeah, so when I left university, I wanted to be a full-time athlete so that I could become a world-class full-time professional athlete. But I wasn't anywhere near good enough to earn a living from it. And my parents said, you've got to get a proper job. And I also, like most students, had no money. So I thought, well, what job am I going to do? And I decided to apply to the civil service. And because I traveled a lot when I was younger and lived in Africa when I was small, I decided I wanted to be a diplomat. So I applied to the Foreign Office and got in. And I started off working full time. I did a year in London on a desk working on Hungary and Slovakia. And then I learned Japanese for a year in London. And then I was posted to Japan, learned Japanese there for a year. And then I worked in the embassy in Tokyo for 3 years. And that was all full time. And I was trying to run during that time, but because I was really busy at work, it was never at a very high level. And then when I left Tokyo to return to London, that's when I thought, right, this athlete thing, it's now or never. So I switched to a job share so that I could have enough time to train and work. And during those years, I did 2 different job shares, and I also worked in another job part-time, so 70% time. So that allowed me to keep my job going, but also have enough time for work. And then at the end of that time, I was at a level where I could earn a living from running. So I took unpaid leave and I became a full-time athlete. So I think working and training is really good in terms of you don't become too obsessive about running. If you're injured and unable to train or compete, you have something else in your life, which is really important. You're developing skills and experience for when your sporting career is over. So there are a lot of good things about working and training, but it really doesn't leave you much time for anything else. So that's why I think that's why a lot of world-class athletes are full-time athletes.
Maura, I actually have 2 questions on what you've just said there before we kind of continue. Firstly, yes. Do you think it is possible to be a world-class, top athlete and have a job is my first one. And secondly, you kind of mentioned in the first questions, Japanese marathon runners and their work ethic. What did you learn from training over in Japan that you kind of probably think helped you ultimately in your career as well?
Yeah, so nowadays, I can't think of any absolutely top world-class level athletes who also work, but I know of athletes sort of, you know, at a slightly lower level who are working, and if you look back not that far to like the 1980s, the top British male marathon runners like Steve Jones, Mike Gratton, they were all in full-time work, in often in physically demanding jobs, and running 209 208, that's those sorts of times. So proper world-class times. I mean, now 208, 209 won't win you a world-class race, but it's still a world-class time. So I think it's difficult. I think part-time work is definitely possible. It really depends on the work. If it's perhaps not that demanding, you don't have to commute, that sort of thing, then I think it's definitely doable. And I think it's actually really healthy to have work as well as an athlete, because your life can become far too kind of monodimensional if you're a full-time athlete. That's what I found when I was an athlete, full-time athlete. If I was injured or not performing well, I didn't really have enough other things in my life to have a good balance. And then the Japanese athletes, I guess, the mileage they used to run, just the devotion to their sport, I just found absolutely incredible. And they have a different system in Japan. So many of the elite athletes there are employed by corporate teams. So big companies like Toyota, Shiseido, they will have an athletics team, and they have teams in other sports as well. And those athletes are employees of the company. They may not work at all, or they may work a little bit, but their main job is to run and to train and represent the company as an athlete. So on their vest, when they compete, they'll be written their company name. So that means that they can, because they receive a salary, they're not dependent on prize money for a living. They can be a bit more kind of professional about it and really work hard to get the best result rather than having to worry about earning money.
That's a really interesting system. And I actually wasn't aware that that's how elite level sport worked in Japan. So thanks for sharing that. I guess what would be really interesting to know is what your typical training week looked like when you were at the peak of your career.
Yeah, so on Monday, I would do what I call a fast jog. So basically a steady run. I would also do...
Mara, what pace was that? Go on, you've got to let us in on the paces.
Well, anything between around about 4 minutes per kilometre. I worked in kilometres, not miles. You know, my race pace was 3:23, so 27 seconds slower than race pace. Then on Tuesdays, I would do a speed session of some kind. So that would usually be intervals. It varied in length. You know, sometimes I would do really short intervals like 400s, 300s, and then sometimes longer efforts like kilometer reps, 2 kilometer reps, that sort of thing. And then Wednesdays I would usually do what I call a mid-long run. So a long run, but short. So anything from sort of 13 up to 17 miles. Then Thursday I would have easy. Friday I would usually do a tempo run or long intervals. So anything over about 5 minutes in length. Saturday I would do easy, Sunday long run. And then within that I would do 2 or 3 strength and conditioning sessions. Every speed session would have drills along with it. So that was the rough weekly schedule. I also did have a day off most weeks. And I sometimes stretched 7 days to 8 or 9 days. So essentially in one cycle, I was doing two speed sessions, a mid-long run, a long run, steady running, strength and conditioning, drills, and a day off.
What was the weekly mileage, do you think, on your peak kind of weeks?
I would try to get up to sort of 95, 100 consistently. I never really managed to do more than 100 with any kind of consistency. I would occasionally do 100 plus, but I would always end up too tired or injured or overtrained. So it's relatively little for an elite female marathon runner, but I was already quite old at that stage. And I just felt that mileage, people obsess about mileage, but if it isn't making you go faster, it's really pointless. You know, what matters is what your training is doing for you, not what your training is. You know, if you're training 100 miles a week and you're performing badly in races, then it's no good for you. You might as well do less. So I tried not to obsess too much about miles.
Definitely. And I think a lot of people now, especially with their Garmins, etc., get quite obsessive over weekly mileage. But you're right in that your trainer needs to be improving you and kind of worry less a little bit about the mileage. But what I really want to know is, what is your favourite and worst session? Because all athletes have them for sure.
Yeah. So I really love running hills. Because there's no distance or time pressure. You know, you're not looking to run X over Y meters as you would be on the track or on the road. I just love the variety of hills. It's a form of strength training. You can kind of give it as much effort as you want. So there's a sense of freedom in it, I guess, which you don't get in. So you certainly don't get in track sessions. And then worst session, probably tough track sessions or tough long runs. So I used to try and do quite good quality long runs. And that was just really, really tough, really, really hard.
I think I read as well, Mara, that you did a session which sounded something like 3 5Ks at some ridiculous pace of like 17 minutes. Yeah. I mean, if that was true, that sounded awful. Obviously, that was, it must have been your peak, because a 5K at anything 17 is ridiculous. We're winning park runs for sure.
Yeah, so that was probably it. What I call my killer session, which appeared in Athletics Weekly. I did 3x5K in Flagstaff, Arizona, shortly before running 2:23. So that was a sort of tempo type session. It was effectively 3x17 minutes. So because it was at altitude, it was a bit slower than what I would have done at sea level. But yeah, long. That's what you have to do for the marathon: long intervals. Yeah, so that was pretty tough.
Hey, it worked and it paid off, so maybe I should give it a go. Although I don't think I'm anywhere near a 2:23 marathon or ever will be. So you made two Olympic Games in your career, and in Beijing you were the best placed female marathon runner, or joint best placed female marathon runner ever, coming sixth in the Olympic Games. So can you tell us about that day and what it was like to go to Beijing?
Yeah, so my goal originally was just to make the team and be on the start line and run in the Olympics. And then as time went by, I was improving. And by the time the Olympics arrived, I realized that I was in shape to be competitive, not necessarily win a medal, but, you know, be competitive. And there was a lot of hype made about the hot weather and the pollution in Beijing. So I did heat acclimatization, but then 2 days before the women's marathon, there was a heavy rainstorm. And actually on the day, it was much cooler than what we had been expecting. And the race went off very slowly. We ran the first 15K, really slowly. But I wasn't going to be a mug and go to the front and be everyone's pacemaker. So I just tucked in and went with the pace. And then Constantina Tomescu-Dita took off around, I think it was around 15K. And she had a reputation for overcooking things in marathons and slowing down in the final stages. So we all let her go. And then later in the race, I ended up in the second group, and we just had a massive burn up for the last 10K or so. And in the final, I was right up there, but in the final 1 kilometer or so, we were basically in a sprint, and I ended up sixth. And I was over the moon with finishing sixth. But there was a bit of disappointment that I hadn't been more confident to go with Tomescu when she set off. And I think that was mainly because of my experience in the World Championships in Osaka the year before, where I had gone too fast too soon. And she was winning the gold medal as I was running on the track. and I finished 22 seconds behind the bronze medal. So there was a little bit of disappointment that I was actually really close to the medals, but not quite in them. So yeah, it was a fantastic experience. I loved every minute of it. I was in great shape. I performed well on the day. Perhaps I could have been a bit more aggressive in my race tactics, but overall it was great.
But Mara, that was obviously reaching your first Olympics. That was your dream for years at the age of 35. Yeah. And you said on your website, you know, life is never straightforward. It took you 24 years before you realized that dream of lining up at the start of the 2008 Beijing Olympics women's marathon. You know, your journey was so long, and you said you learned a huge amount about going after your dream and motivation, perseverance. These are your words: overcoming setbacks and never giving up. 24 years is a very, very long time to go after a dream. What kept you going? Because I know so many people, especially in this day and age, want it so quickly, so fast, and want it right now. What kept you going?
Yeah, so when I was 11, watching the Los Angeles Olympics, Daley Thompson and all the other stars, that gave me a kind of dream in my heart that I wanted to be a top athlete. But I was only 11 years old, so I had no idea how I would do it or in what event or when, nothing. But I just had this sort of burning desire from that moment on to be a world-class athlete. And I think that's what sustained me through all those years. Because, for example, when I left full-time education, I wanted to be an athlete, but I couldn't earn a living as an athlete, so I had to get a proper job. But when I was in that job, I kept running, and I never forgot that dream. So I guess just if you really want something badly enough, you'll keep pursuing it. But I mean, all along the way, I kind of didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't know which group I had to be in, how I could earn money. You know, it's not clear, for certainly for British athletes, how you become a world-beating marathon athlete. If you live in Japan, you join a corporate team. Mm. If you live in the US, you go to a top university. But in the UK, the system is not that clear-cut. So I sort of made serious attempts from time to time, but then I got sidetracked by work and other things. And I guess just a love of running and just having that clear dream. And when after I retired, I got into quite serious mental ill health, I think because that dream was over and I no longer had something kind of sparkling to aim for.
So I guess you went to the Olympics in Beijing, you achieved your dream, and then 4 years later, you were one of the first athletes to be announced as representing your country for the host games in London 2012. Isn't that what dreams are made of as well?
Yes, absolutely. So after the Beijing Olympics, I was 35. Normally, you know, for most athletes, you would have wanted to call it a day then, you know, quit while you're on top. But London was going to be the next host city. So I thought, well, running in a home Olympics as an athlete is a very special thing, which few athletes get to experience. It's just pure chance if the Olympics come to your city while you're competing. So I thought, well, I have to keep going. And because I'd come sixth and I was still improving, I thought, oh, you know, next time it can be a medal. So I kept competing and aimed for London, and sadly injuries meant that I didn't finish that race, but I qualified and I made the team and I was there. So that was really special.
Yeah, you mentioned there, obviously you didn't finish, you had a DNF, but making a home Olympics games with all the support, which I'm sure you experienced around that course that day, you know, it's just awesome. And then I guess that was, you know, nearing the end of your career, Mara, then.
Yes.
It was 2013 when you decided to retire. But you mentioned earlier that you don't run that fast for 5Ks and stuff now, but you still ran last year, 2:59 for the marathon. Like, excuse me, how do you have time to train? And do you still train, or do you think it's still part of your muscle memory and the fact that you did go so far and that pace feels a little easier than it would for me and Amana, say? We're close, but not quite there yet.
Yeah, I mean, since I've retired, I've kept running at a much lower level. And then a friend I made in Japan was pestering me to come and run her race, which was Ehime Marathon in southwest Japan. This was while I was still competing and I couldn't do it. And then after I retired, I was busy with other things. I couldn't do it. Eventually, I agreed. So when I agreed, it was about 6 months before race day, I thought, right, I really have to get in shape for this, because half marathon, 10K, 5K, you can do it if you're not in that good shape. It's hard, but you can do it. A marathon, if you're not in shape, is just unbearable from start to finish if you're not prepared. It's a lot of suffering. And I just didn't want that. So I thought, well, I really have to get in shape. So I just trained more. I mean, still much, much less than I used to do. But I did some really reasonable long runs. I started doing more sessions. I was just a bit more consistent. But I thought I was in about 3:10 shape. And I set off at that speed. And I passed halfway in 1:31. And I had to stop briefly in the first half. So despite that, I passed halfway in 1:31. And I thought, oh, this is going better than I thought it was going to be. And then at about 30K, no, a bit further on, I could see a big group ahead of me, and I realized that that was the 3-hour group. So, and I was catching them. So I thought, oh, I can break 3 hours here. I just felt good. And I think having started off relatively conservatively meant that I was feeling strong in the second half, and I was able to finish strongly and run a big negative split. So yeah, training is how you do it. There's really no shortcuts. You just have to train hard.
So my aim at the moment is to go sub-3, and I would love to have a race like you just described. So is your top tip for me just to keep training and be consistent, or is there more to it?
You won't run a fast marathon unless you train hard. That's fact.
Yeah.
But apart from training, there are other things like, you know, you've got to eat properly, prevent injury, get enough rest, look after yourself, you know, or strength and conditioning, all those sort of additional things which support good running training have their place and are important. At the end of the day, whatever speed you're running at, training followed by rest and refueling repeatedly, you know, training in the right amounts and quality, will make you faster over time. That's the process of super compensation, it's called. So if you are improving, then you know that what you're doing is working, and you've just got to keep doing it. If you're not improving, then you maybe need to stand back and think, okay, something's not quite right here. Am I training enough or too much, or am I not eating enough? But if you're improving, then my advice is just keep doing what you're doing.
We always forget the rest sometimes, don't we? And we just keep running, and then we get injured, and then it all falls apart anyway. So rest, like you said, in there is important.
Yeah, I think rest is perhaps the least appreciated of all the really important factors in training. Your natural instinct is always to train more, but it's actually while you're resting that you do the adaptation. So rest is so important.
And I think during lockdown, it's provided an opportunity for a lot of people to rest more. I personally have found that I've actually slept a lot more, and I feel a lot better in the day and during my runs. But we touched on this earlier in the podcast, but obviously there are a lot of our listeners aren't full-time athletes, and they do juggle their training with full-time work. And as you said, there's a lot of things that need to happen to supplement the running, like the resting, the nutrition, injury prevention, stretching. Do you have any tips as a coach now to help people kind of juggle all of that and manage all of that?
Yeah, I think just being organized. So, I mean, I used to make myself a goals sheet, and I would write down what I was going to do week by week. And on things like sort of stretching or getting enough sleep, you can set yourself small goals. So on stretching, let's say, you could say, right, I'm going to do 2 lots of 30 minutes stretching per week, come what may. And then you can schedule them. For sleep, you can say, right, 2 nights this week, I'm going to get a minimum of 9 hours sleep, let's say. It doesn't have to be every day, but just make yourself do stuff in small amounts. I call this process goals. So how, you know, what you do in your processes day to day. So I think just being organized and thinking, right, I need to do X, Y, Z. When am I going to do it? Write it down, make sure you do it.
One thing, I have a couple more questions, but one actually, Mara, as well. During a marathon, half of it's a mental game. Was there anything that you used to kind of repeat in your head, or, you know, say to yourself to kind of get you through the full 26.2? What was your methods, if you have any?
Yeah, so I used to set myself small goals. So I used to, for example, say, right, let's just get to the next mile marker. Let's get to the next lamppost. Let's get to the next drink station, and just concentrate on that. And then when I'd reached that point, then I would set another goal. So that's what I would do in the tough bits. In the first half, when it's quite easy, I would just try to concentrate on feeling relaxed, trying not to use too much energy, make sure I got my drinks, make sure I was on the roughly the right sort of pace. So you don't need Well, I didn't find I needed those little mental tricks in the first half, but certainly into the second half and certainly into the last sort of 8 miles, when you are really suffering, you need some little trick like that. And what works for one person is different to the next. So for me, the small goals worked, but for others, having a mantra or thinking about their breathing or counting, or, you know, it varies what works for each person. So my advice is just experiment, find what works for you, and then do it.
Definitely. And Rachel and I have spoken on the podcast previously. We both like to count. That's our one for when it gets a bit tough in towards the end of the marathon.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we like that. Count to 100. Our final question for you today is, we both read on your website, and it's something that we both agree with. You talk about how invaluable the skills that you learn in running impact on your life. So how would you sum up how running has shaped you as an individual today?
I guess hard work is one thing. So through running, I've understood that hard work gets you places. I've also understood that there are some things which you cannot do by shortcuts. You know, and it's just pointless trying to find a shortcut because they don't exist. You might as well just knuckle down and do the hard work. I guess I'm quite a solitary, kind of introverted type person, and that, I don't know if that's a cause or an effect of running. I guess maybe, I think distance running does attract introverts in some ways. So I think running has made me quite aware of that. And it's not always an attractive kind of attribute. You know, I think people, I can come across as quite aloof or, I don't know, not engaging sometimes. So I need to be aware of that, because I don't want to appear to other people as kind of unapproachable. I want people to, you know, think I'm a nice person. So that has given me that awareness. I guess, it's enabled me to travel and do things like run in the Olympics or go and train at altitude or meet certain people, which I wouldn't have been able to do other than through running. I'm very grateful for that. I think friendships built up through running are also really special, because when you train with your friends, you suffer together and you go through hard work together. It's very different to sitting in a coffee shop with a friend. So I think training with other runners is a real kind of bonding experience, and you help each other, you know, you pick each other up when you're having bad days, and that's, I love that. I'm really grateful that running has given me that.
Thank you, Mara. I loved all that. I'm really sitting here deep in thought right now. Processing everything that you have said, and I can clarify that I didn't think you were aloof at all. When I spent 2.5 weeks with you in Doha, I thought you were lovely. So,
oh, that's very kind.
I mean, our group out there, there's about 10 of us, we all got on great, and you know, looking forward to many more adventures that running seems to give us in the future.
Yeah, definitely. I couldn't recommend it more. It's a fabulous sport.
Yeah, so hopefully you'll be lucky enough to go and commentate for World Athletics at hopefully Oregon in now 2022. It's moved, hasn't it? Everything is moving.
Yeah. I mean, the sports calendar have, you know, it's all the governing bodies have really responded well to coronavirus by delaying everything. I'm sure it's been really, really hard to do, and I'm sure it will cost a lot, but let's hope it all goes to plan, even if it's a year behind schedule.
Absolutely, I'm sure it will. I've spoken to the powers that be, and they assure us the events will be back on. Maybe not as we know it, but they will be back. But Mara, thank you so much for joining us. We've absolutely loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. And thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on and for your time and sharing your inspiring story. It's been great to hear.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I loved having Mara on. It was so great to have a friend on and have a good old chat with her. And one of the things that I wanted to pick up on from what she said was The fact that it took her 24 years to realize her dream, and that was of becoming an Olympian. And she didn't achieve that until she was 35 years old, when she finally towed the start line of an Olympic marathon. And that was at Beijing in 2008. And I think that is just testament to her personality of never giving up, and kind of is the complete opposite maybe of what a lot of people feel these days. Everyone wants things right here, right now. But running especially is a sport that you cannot cut corners on. You have to put in the hard work and effort. And some people might be new to running and want to get really fast really quickly. It's not going to happen. You need to just slow it down and trust in the process of your training, and you'll get there eventually. Or on the other hand, some people might have had their marathon postponed or cancelled for this year. So many people have. And you might be really upset about that. Don't worry about it. Your time will come again. There'll be another marathon one day. And you just need to trust in your ability, whatever goals you have set in your training, and keep at it. And one day you will achieve what you want to achieve in terms of a marathon or a fast PB or just keeping up running. But remember what Mara did. It took her 24 years. Anything that you really want, anything worth having, takes time to get.
Rach, I definitely agree with that. And it's definitely something I picked up on when we were talking to Mara. I think in the age that we live in, it's very easy to want things very quickly. I mean, you click on Instagram, go through your social media, you see someone achieve that Boston qualifying time, that sub 3 hour marathon, or that fast park run time, whatever it is, you see it and you want it very quickly. And I think we can just online shop and have a new dress instantly. And I think, like you said, running is not like that. Running takes years of hard work, building it slowly. And I think it's a difficult time that we live in where everything is so accessible to us. So that was very interesting. But that is all that we have time for this week. So thank you for listening. And if you want to join the conversation, I'm at @Amana_Rai.
And I'm at @Rachel_Stringer. And until next time, keep running.